Welcome to a special broadcast of All Sides with Ann Fisher from the Columbus Metropolitan Library. We're here to celebrate the Great American Read. And so for more information on that, go to WOSU.org if you have time. Join us at the Downtown Public Library. Today we're going to talk about what's being done to spread literacy. Every district in Franklin County fell short of an A in literacy improvement on the state's report cards this week because literacy is a foundational skill. Everyone in the food chain of education cares. We'll be talking to some of Central Ohio's literacy experts today. So joining us now is Columbus City Schools Curriculum Director Leslie Kelly. Welcome to the show, Leslie.
Good morning.
And also joining us from the Ohio State University Literacy Collaborative, where she teaches teachers, Shelley Schaub. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
How do we define literacy, Shelley?
Well, you know, we really work hard at the university to think about literacy in a very broad way. We really work with Mari Clay's definition of reading, which is that reading is a message-getting, problem-solving activity. And when we think about literacy overall, we understand that literacy is about making meaning, whether you're reading, whether you're writing, and we have to keep that at the forefront of our mind as we start to work with students and we start to understand how some students may find reading difficult. And so we've got to find ways to engage students, to allow students to have choice, and to be always thinking about what would be the cutting edge for that particular student to actually get in and start to make a difference for them.
And conversely, Leslie Kelly, what do we mean by illiteracy then?
Illiteracy is where you struggle with being a sense maker. You struggle with being able to make that meaning and drawing that meaning from the words on a page, from the words around you. And so we really, you know, back to Shelley's point, we want to make sure that we are doing everything we can to help our students make meaning from those words in order to allow them to make sense of the world around them.
How soon can you tell that someone's not getting it, that they're not able to crack the code?
Well, I think that what we have to do is be very aware of children and in their environment. And we start with oral language. You know, literacy begins with a student and a child's ability to speak and listen. And oftentimes we encounter children who are struggling with certain parts of reading because their oral language isn't fully developed. And so we really want to make sure that children have a lot of opportunity to talk, to listen and be engaged in conversations. No more the day that we want children to be seen and not heard.
Mm-hmm.
Because we really want those oral skills to develop early on so that those oral skills can then be used as an asset as they begin to read and write.
How is it an asset? So they're able to express themselves. How does that work?
Well, you know, I speak in sentences, you know, and books are written in sentences. And so when we start to understand that what I'm saying is what I'm also able to read, and that's what that print is beginning to sound to me like talking. If I'm only saying words, one or two words in answer form, it's going to be harder for me to read a sentence that might have five or six words in it in some of the earlier books.
What are some other red flags, Leslie?
Well, what I would say too is we have to be really careful putting labels on children.
Mm-hmm.
And determining that they can't crack the code. It's more about finding the right tool to help them crack the code. And the earlier that parents engage in oral language with their students, one of the things that we work with parents about is when you take them to the park or you take them for a walk down the street, ask your child, what do you see? What do you think that is? If you see a bird, what do you think that bird's going to go next? Let's start a story. I'm going to start the first sentence, then you do the next one, and then I'll do the next one. The more you engage students or their children with the world around them, the more you ask them questions and engage in conversation, the students are going to build their language skills. But it's also developing a frame of reference. Columbus has a tremendous public transportation system. So you can get to the library. This is a great place to bring your child to expand their frame of reference. To get down to the State Department has a great, the State House has a great children's area down on the bottom floor, COSI. There's all these different places where you can take your child and ask them questions. We developed with COSI family sentence starters. So that when you go to CoSight and you see an exhibit, if you sit and you watch, a lot of times families are just looking at the exhibit. You might not see conversation being engaged. So we help develop sentence starters where families can, it gives parents, what's a question you can ask? How do you start those conversations? Because those are those early building blocks that you see with the students to help gauge them and get them moving forward and building that vocabulary.
And I would add into that to say that, you know, in today's society that's so technology driven, not only are students at younger and younger age having access to tablets or phones or something, so their oral language abilities are diminishing because they're spending a lot of
time. Everything's so online and in their ear.
That's right. Yeah. And then I also think about the new generation of parents who, when I raised my boys, when they were younger, I didn't have the cell phone and that media. So I was constantly talking to them. Now it feels that we've got so much access with parents raising children who parents are in their phones a lot as well. So we really want to encourage parents to put the phone down, talk to your children, read to your children, help your children notice the world outside of that screen.
And I guess, you know, if you're really hung up on the phone, play Pokemon Go and get out of the house and walk around with it at least, right?
Right.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We are celebrating the Great American Read today at the Columbus Metropolitan Library downtown. It's so fabulous since it's been renovated and added on to. We encourage you to come on down to the library, check it out this week, and celebrate with us. We'll be here all hour. This hour, we're talking about literacy, a good foundation for the Great American Read. And coming up next hour, my colleague Chris Purdy is going to be talking books. So stay with us for that. My guests, Leslie Kelly, Columbus City Schools Director of Curriculum, and also with me, Shelley Schaub. She's with the OSU Literacy Collaborative. They teach teachers to teach reading. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I know I have a 100 questions as usual, but if you have a question about literacy, if you're worried about your kid, if you're struggling to read and wonder what you can do as an adult, call us and we're gonna talk to you. 614-292-8513. How has it's hard for me to decide who to ask this question, but how has teaching reading changed over the years? Now, I remember when I was a kid, it was phonics only, which was great because I was one of those spontaneous readers, right? Phonics made a lot of sense to me, but it was also just Dick and Jane, which I apparently loved because I kept reading. But how has things changed over time when it comes to teaching reading?
I think that's a great question. I'll step in here and then you can add in. My fear is that reading instruction hasn't changed enough over the years.
Oh.
I feel like education sometimes is slow to change. And of course, at the working, you know, from a university perspective, we're constantly looking at the latest research and constantly working in schools to learn from children and learn from teachers. But I think that one thing that we have to remember is that our language is built on a hierarchy, and that is that, you know, we've got this book that's a full story, and within that story is sentences, and within those sentences are words all the way down to letters. And what we have to think about is that sometimes the logic by which we teach isn't always the logic by which children learn. So in other words, logic by which we might teach would be that I'm going to start with the letters, and then I'm going to build those letters into words, and then I'm going to put those words into sentences, and then eventually the kids will be able to read a book. In fact, that's not how children acquire literacy at all. They actually acquire literacy through the lens of, wow, this is a really interesting book. I'd really like to read this. I'd really like to have someone help me read this. And as they work with a more knowing other, that more knowing other can help them dip down into those words and dip down into those letters to see how those actually make up a meaningful approach, a meaningful story. And that's the motivation kids need to keep going.
It seems a little, I did an interview with Jacqueline Woodson, the great author, the ambassador of literacy in the United States right now. And the audience was filled with teachers and they were buying gobs of her books. And you know, any classroom today that I've been in has whole personal libraries in mm-hmm. them. That's so unlike what I grew up with. Mm-hmm. So it seems like they have a lot of access, Leslie Kelly, but what?
So there's a lot of resources. And sometimes we focus so much on the resources that the process becomes secondary. Yeah. We really need to focus on the process and let the resources feed that process.
Okay.
So we also have to make sure we are identifying what are those individual challenges for each student. Columbus City Schools this year, we are piloting a new program called iReady that is going to allow our teachers to get down to the finite skill level as with those foundational skills that our students might be challenged with. That, along with our balanced literacy approach, where students are engaging with authentic text every day, is what we're looking to help move our students forward. But really, you hear a lot about teachers or schools sometimes focusing so much on their resources. But really, it's that process. And in Columbus City Schools, we are really looking at those ways and trying to define those ways of how we can help identify for each student what are their particular challenges, and then build a plan for those students.
There's the Ohio Department of Education launched the third grade reading guarantee in 2014. Mm-hmm. There are also standardized tests, and of course there's the, you know, state report card, which came out this week. Do those kinds of metrics incentivize? Do they encourage? What kind of impact do they have on what you do, Leslie Kelly?
It is good to have an accountability factor, but when we are also in a state of where we look at universal design for learning, where we're looking at how we can provide access for all learners, and so we work with teachers to identify ways that you can engage students on a personal level, and you can provide access on a personal level, and give them opportunities to present evidence of learning in a way that fits them, it sometimes becomes difficult to help them bridge that gap on a state assessment where everybody has to present their learning in the same way on the same day.
Mm.
So it's two different factors.
Yeah.
There.
So frustrating. Shelley Schaub, how do you teach teachers to make that leap? Or is that, you know, just don't have time to...
Oh, no, it's definitely something that you need to take into account. And it's something that is high stakes for children and high stakes for districts. So we want to make sure that we understand, though, that multiple data points actually is the way to understand how a student is learning and how they're progressing. So I often describe state standardized tests and those kinds of tests as sort of data that has a far away view, far away point. We can look at it and we see that number and it just sort of has that rating. But what we need to use is data that has a really up close personal connection to each child. And we use different kinds of tools to assess a child up close so that we can build what they know, what they need to know next, how I'm going to teach it, to build towards those far away overarching state test goals.
What are some of the data points, or can you give me a thumbnail, Leslie Kelly, in Columbus City Schools that you use?
So we use our NWEA MAP assessments, and that is our beginning of the year, middle of the year, and end of the year diagnostic assessment.
Are those like word lists or sight words and that kind of a thing?
The NWEA MAP is a diagnostic comprehensive test of students' reading, overall reading ability. And so that, again, is your beginning, middle, and end. But really where the power lies is when our teachers are running records during their guided reading groups, where they're listening to students read, they're really tracking and paying attention to where are those errors in that reading. Are they substituting words? And then they get into comprehension. Because sometimes you can have a student who is very fluent, and I know the words, but I really don't understand what I read. And that comes from that deep, really, analysis of that student reading. You need to see a child read. You need to observe those student behaviors. There's reading behaviors. But the other part of it is you need to help that student see a picture when they read, because that's when you catch them. When reading becomes something that they enjoy, not just something that they do, that's when you motivate them. That's where that power is. And so we also do a lot of work with parents and helping parents showing parents, how do you read with a child? Because we just assume everybody knows how to do that. So how do you read with a child? How do you help a child explore a book if they can't read? If they actually don't know the words, how do you begin with that? And what does that look like? So that reading becomes something we do as a family not something that is just done at school.
That's interesting. I can literally still remember the first book I read that didn't have pictures in it, and I was so proud. Because what I was taking for granted at the time was I'm able to read the book and not have to have pictures in front of me to tell me what it's about.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I can see the pictures in my mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
We believe that all children want to read. Mm-hmm. It's just that when it becomes so hard, they lose that desire. And so we really want to make sure that we are looking at what they can do and build from there. Like in your example, you were so excited when you realized that you could actually
Adopted
do this.
Adopted Jane. That was
a yes. Book. Luckily, we have some really great literature now that the kids really can find their interest level in it. But we want to make sure that we are get tapping in as early as possible to those desires that children have to be readers.
And the third grade guarantee, the point being with that, Leslie Kelly, is that if they can't read, but at the point at third grade or at starting in fourth grade, kids read to learn. From kindergarten through third grade, they learn to read. Super critical because there aren't the reading classes in fourth grade going forward.
Absolutely. But at the same time, we also work with our teachers that when you have those students that still have those foundational gaps, you have to go back and fill those in. The key is you have to scaffold. So you have to take the more complex standards that you may be working on and scaffold back and build in those foundational pieces for those kids, because everybody is a reading teacher. Whether you are a math teacher, whether you are a science teacher, everybody is a reading teacher. So you always are looking for those opportunities to build that. But with those early, our early kiddos, and we talked a little bit about the importance of doing different, engaging them in different ways. But some of the best ways that you can also do that is that writing in sand. Mm. You know, putting your child on a plastic tablecloth and then putting pudding all around them and writing it letters down and engaging. What words can we make? Mm-hmm. The more we can engage students with language, with words, and a multi-sensory approach early on, absolutely makes a difference for them.
Leslie Kelly, we have to let you go, but thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
That's Leslie Kelly. She's Columbus City Schools Director of Curriculum. We will continue our conversation about literacy, and I'm going to get to those calls, so keep them coming, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're broadcasting today from the Columbus Metropolitan Library in celebration of the Great American and read. To learn more about that, go to WOSU.org and check out our link. So stay with us. This will be all right. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to a special broadcast of All Sides from the interior of the beautiful Columbus Metropolitan Library. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're here to celebrate the Great American Read today. For more information, go to the link at WOSU.org and check that out. Reading is the foundation of all learning in our society. Experts say that a child who is behind by the end of the third grade tends to stay behind as the focus shifts from basic skills to knowledge. That is, you can't learn if you don't have those skills down. Still with us from OSU's Literacy Collaborative, Shelley Chobb. Joining us now is Public Services Director at the Columbus Metropolitan Library, Kathy Shabadagi. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You know, I guess the library isn't obvious to a lot of people, but maybe not to a lot of other people. What's the role of the library in literacy?
Library has a huge role in literacy, particularly for Columbus Metropolitan Library, early literacy. We are very focused on our young minds, our serving families with children from birth through the teen years. And we're very focused on a couple areas in early literacy, so kindergarten readiness as well as third grade reading.
What's the difference? What's kindergarten readiness mean?
Kindergarten readiness is all about the skills that children need when they start school. So children don't start school with a blank slate and then learn from there from their teacher. They actually need to start school with a whole set of early literacy skills.
And what are those skills?
Sure. The skills related to literacy are a couple very known things. letter recognition. So okay. Knowing the names of the alphabet letters, both upper and lower case, knowing that sounds, the letters make sounds and what those are.
Phonics.
That's right. Rhyming, having an understanding of what rhyming is. And then most important of all, really, vocabulary. So knowing lots of words and what they mean.
Some people think, you know, they talk about what are we doing to kids nowadays? They're teaching them how to read in kindergarten. But as I look back, when I think about my kindergarten experience, I was probably being taught to read even back in the olden days. We just didn't know it. Is it still that way for kids? They just don't necessarily know they're learning?
I think that probably today there's a little more emphasis, and maybe they do know. But what we know is that learning doesn't have to be just direct instruction, that learning can be so rich and just part of everyday life.
Like we were talking about earlier, yeah. Just taking a walk, Shelley Schaub, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, what recent research has shown is that nationwide, more children actually are attending preschools. And that preschool experience is really helping children with raising some of the expectations.
Is it showing up in the statistics? Are we more literate today than we were, say, 50 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, some early research is showing that, you know, at the end of kindergarten, children are ready to move beyond what we would call early reading behaviors, meaning they know how to point one-to-one, match to words, they know how to use a picture to help them make meaning, they know their some of, you know, the letters, sounds, and how their sounds connect. So it used to be that was not necessarily an expectation for the end of kindergarten. Now we're seeing, based on how students are entering school with more preschool experience, that is a strong expectation.
All things being equal, Kathy Shabadagi, is reading something natural for humans to do?
It probably isn't natural. And for many children, reading does happen very naturally. But for some children, it doesn't, and it is more of a process. However, everyone can learn, and so much of it and so much of what the library is focused on is helping parents understand their role as their child's first teacher and how rich early learning experiences are going to get your child ready to either be taught how to read or to just naturally flow into reading.
There's a program I remember hearing about in New York City that part of their literacy push was to also make sure that the parents knew how to read. And that's complicated further by if you're English as a second language, right?
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
That's a lot of what Columbus City Schools grapples with, I know.
Yeah, I would say not just Columbus, but, you know, a lot of suburbs are seeing a large, you know, gift of English language learners entering schools, because it definitely broadens our understandings about diversity. But it also presents some challenges when teachers aren't sure how to teach a child who has a second language how to read in English.
Right.
But again, I go back to, you know, the children need to have that overall exposure to oral language. They need to be immersed in books, good books, that they're able to, you know, sustain some attention, listening to those books, looking at those pictures and how those pictures connect to what's being said orally. That's the foundation from which they're going to be able to acquire some of the literacy skills that we expect from independent readers.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're broadcasting from the absolutely fabulous Columbus Metropolitan Library downtown. If you can, join us today. We're talking about literacy this hour in celebration of the Great American Read. To learn more about that, go to the link on our website at WOSU.org. Mike in Grove City, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mike. Mike, in Grove City, you're on the air? Okay. We don't have him. We will try again. When a child comes into class delayed, how do you distinguish between a delay, maybe they weren't introduced to reading and all of the skills we've been talking about at the right time, at the right age. Maybe they have a learning disability, something like dyslexia. How do teachers know to make that distinction, and how important is it to make the distinction soon? Shelley Schaub?
That's a great question. We work with children and buildings and work with teachers everywhere. And, you know, what we need to be able to do is observe children very closely from a very early age. So, you know, kindergarten teachers are just experts at being able to observe children and being able to see a potential gap. And it's through multiple data points where we're really digging into what's happening with these children that we're able to see some red flags across multiple data points, not just one. So, for example, you know, maybe in kindergarten, the child might have low letter identification. In reading recovery, we use a tool called the observation survey that has multiple aspects of, you know, observing
this
children.
This is where you're actually watching how they do each word in a sentence.
That's exactly right. So you're really closely observing what's happening there. There's a task called hearing and recording sounds and words, which I find to be fabulous. Children have to hear a sentence and be able to think about what letter would match to that particular word in that sentence, and then be able to record that on a sheet. And there's national stainines related to what's considered to be average, what's above average, and what's below average. So I always encourage schools and teachers to think about and learn and investigate the multiple opportunities to truly observe and systematically assess students very early on.
Here at the Columbus Metropolitan Library, what sorts of tools are there? What kind of programs do you have to help with this?
Fortunately, we have a wide array for families. For families with young children, so birth through 5 years, we have everything from story time, which are 30-minute programs that are targeted towards young children and their parents. So not only are we offering an engaging experience with books and with activity and song, but also helping parents understand why we're doing that and how they might extend that learning at home. We also offer Ready for Kindergarten classes, which are much more tactile and much more direct instruction for parents and children together to work on activities that are going to help with those kindergarten readiness skills.
And this helps gives parents some ideas about what to do.
Sure does. Exactly. We also offer in the summertime, we have kindergarten boot camps, which are for 5-year-old children entering kindergarten that year. And again, it's that experience for the child about what school is going to look like, and then also for the parent, how they can help their child with homework and supporting their child once that child does start school.
We have a call now, Darla in Sunbury. You're on the air. Hi, Darla. Hello, Darla. Okay. We don't have Darla. Sorry about that, folks. How does socioeconomic status play into all of this? Are there correlations that are useful for us to know about? Shelley Schaub?
Yeah, it's difficult because you don't want to ever categorize children in certain ways because of their past experiences.
Right.
But it's very, very important that you recognize that, you know, some children are coming from homes where literacy isn't at the forefront of their minds. What's at the forefront of their minds is assuring that the children have on clothes and that they're able to pay the bills. And those are important. And so, you know, I think that we as educators need to be incredibly sensitive to the needs and where the students are coming from, and understand that it's our job to treat all children with respect, with dignity, and have the same level of expectation. We just might go about that in a new and a different, unique way for each child.
There's a sign when I come into the library, Kathy Shabadagi, and I'm going to paraphrase it, but it says it's the greatest democracy of all, a library is, because everybody can enter the doors. There's no requirement. Anyone can come here. And I think that's one of the best things about a library. So you see the gamut.
We sure do. You know, Andrew Carnegie, the great funder and founder of many libraries, called them the people's university.
Uh-huh.
And I think that is just quite a delightful, wonderful way to think about libraries. And it's so true. And when families of all kinds walk into our libraries, we really want to engage that family. And it is our goal to do that, not just to help them with you know, finding a particular book, but also take it beyond that to how you as a parent, how you can help your child be ready for kindergarten, and whether that's through a particular kind of book or activities that we can get you started on here at the library, and then you can take home or continue at home. And so we are very much not in a passive role, but in that active role of helping families with young children think about their role as their child's first teacher.
I really want to hear from our listeners, but for some reason, the phones aren't working. So if you can email us at allsides@wosu.org, we can get the messages through by email. So please take the time to do that. If you have a question for our guests, Kathy Shabadagi just spoke. She's Public Services Director at the Columbus Metropolitan Library. That's where we are this hour to celebrate the Great American Read by way of a conversation about literacy. Also with us, Shelley Schaub with the OSU Literacy Collaborative. She teaches teachers to teach reading. So there's a lot of expertise right here with me. Again, the email is allsides@wosu.org. You can also check out our Facebook page and post your question or your comment there. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to a special broadcast of All Sides at the Columbus Metropolitan Library downtown. My name is Ann Fisher. We're here to celebrate the Great American Read. For more information, go to the link at WOSU.org. We're talking about literacy today because the Great American Read doesn't mean much if you can't read. Still with us is Public Services Director at the Columbus Metropolitan Library, Kathy Shabadagi. And Kathy, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
And also with us from Ohio State's Literacy Collaborative, Shelley Schaub. Shelley, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
I really want to get to these calls, but I'm afraid that there is a technical difficulty, so I'm going to ask for Casey in Utica, how does a book's story affect a child's future reading abilities? In other words, I grew up with, you know, learning with the Dick and Jane series, which was appalling now that you look back on it, but it was what it was. Mm-hmm. How does that affect how a child grows as a reader?
Well, we have to remember that when we're reading is a complex process. And so when a child is even listening to a book, what we want to do is make sure a child's understanding the actual story, what's happening, you know, your typical literal comprehension. But there's also other ways of thinking. What we want to make sure children are able to do is think beyond the actual text. So we want them to be able to make predictions. We want them to be able to infer. And children of the youngest age can begin to infer how a character is feeling based on how the picture of that character, you know, is illustrated in that text. We want children to be able to make connections and synthesize information. I used to know this about elephants, but now I just learned this, something new about elephants, and so I'm adding to my repertoire. And we also want children to be able to think about what does a writer intentionally do to get you engaged in these books? So looking at a text from the perspective of the writer is a really interesting way for us to talk about books. Wow, wasn't that cool how that author just said that? Didn't that make you laugh? And so what you're starting to do is not look at it simply on, can you tell the beginning, middle, end, but can we create an experience around a book that actually looks at that book and connects that book to a student in multiple ways?
You know, Kathy, I wanted to ask you how the library in its renovation process changed the reading room for children and what went into that and how it's different than maybe what a lot of us grew up with.
Absolutely. So we really looked at our children's areas in the light of our focus on kindergarten readiness and how could we create a physical area that would really lend itself to exploration and focus by parents and children on activities, put the books right there that are targeted to birth through age five, offer books even in categories like rhyming or letter recognition, initial sounds, to make it easier for parents to really think about all of those things and really work with their child in a very natural way. To help them be ready for kindergarten.
Everything's sort of scaled down.
That's right.
It matters, right?
It sure does. It's a special area just for a three-year-old or a four-year-old.
What about having books at home?
Oh, that is so key. You know, if every parent had books either from the library and ones they own at home and read simply every day for a few minutes, even 15 minutes, it's not only that picture book reading not only gives the child that vocabulary, that experience, they start to understand the correlation between the spoken word and the text, and it's an incredible bonding time for the parent and the child. So, boy, reading with your child at home every day is really key.
All right, what about for adults who are struggling with reading? What does the library offer them?
Wow, that's a really good question. And, you know, one of the things that I often point adults to are graphic novels, which are books that are in that comic book format that have smaller blocks of text that are just as, you know, interesting and exciting and even more so to some readers. So that's a great place to start.
Mm-hmm. I would also add to that I would encourage adult readers or readers of all ages to think about what you're really interested in, because there have been a lot of research studies on students that show that if it's something they're interested in, they can read many levels above what their maybe current instructional level is, because they have that interest and that motivation. So whether you're an adult who you might just be, you might choose to not be a reader, but you know how to read, or an adult who's learning to read, find something that's really interesting to you and focus on those texts.
Yeah, I think I've read a gazillion more novels than my husband, but he's also read a gazillion more instructional manuals.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Which I apparently refuse to read. So, but I mean, that for me, that's hard reading.
Yeah. That's
and
right.
For him, it comes very easily.
Because it's your interest level.
Exactly.
I wanted to share something, too, that at the university at Literacy Collaborative, we have a outreach program that we call Keep Books. And you were discussing about how to encourage, you know, what do we do about having books at home? Well, children need to have books, as you were saying, Kathy. And we have a whole bunch of books where children can access the reading of these books. So they're written, they're small, they almost look like little tiny coloring books for the kids, but they're written at different levels of reading. And we you know, use these as a homeschool connection, but also for parents to be able to take these books, and it's simple reads. The kids love to color the books. Some of them are in color, some of them are black and white, but we want children to have a collection of books at home, and that's why we call them Keep Books, books that they can keep. We say put them in a shoebox, that's your own collection. You know, if they don't have books at home, it's kind of like going to swimming instruction and the swim teacher says, "No, everybody go home and swim." We don't all have pools. It's kind of the same thing, where we have teachers saying, "Well, go home and read." Well, if they don't have books, they can't do that.
And well, that's where the library comes in, right?
Exactly.
It sure does. And we have a special library card called a kids card, just for kids. Doesn't require a parent's signature on an application. So if a parent's worried about getting a card, fearful of financial obligations, that kids card is designed just for that purpose. We want those books not in on our shelves, but in kids' homes.
And by the way, there are no more fines, right?
That's right.
That's a big deal.
It is.
Has it made a difference?
Well, we hope that it's opened up access to even more customers.
Because the point being that people didn't want to get caught in the rut of owing, and if
Absolutely.
They come back, then they owe and they can't check out another book until they bring the other one in.
Library fines can terrify people, but without those fines, yes, we've opened up access, and between full access library cards and those kids cards, no reason not to be coming to the library.
There is a stigma associated with not being able to read. And it starts very young when you're that kid that gets pulled out of class for special reading and that kind of a thing. But I can't even imagine the intensity of how it feels not to be able to read as an adult. How do you, you know, what do you teach people, Kelly Schaub, about how to break through those barriers, which are constructed for pretty good reasons?
Yeah, the earlier, the younger the students are, the less impact it is if they are pulled for some intervention at school. And in fact, oftentimes in the youngest grades, kindergarten, first grade, the other kids say, "Why don't I get to go?" And so with the reading teacher, mm-hmm. And so I think that if your child is offered the opportunity for extra help, don't deny that extra help because you might have a fear of your child feeling isolated or such. I have worked as a reading teacher. I've worked with lots of schools, and they make it such a comfortable situation for the children to be able to go and get that double dose of reading that they need, but in a very safe, comfortable environment where they're enjoying themselves and they can't wait to share the books they have with kids back in their classrooms because they can read those books.
Mm-hmm. What would you both recommend? I mean, how would you like to see things change more when it comes to literacy?
Well, I'd certainly love to see parents. It's just this national kind of recognition that kindergarten readiness is so important, that it's not the school's responsibility to make sure, sole responsibility to make sure that kids are reading and learning, that it's everybody's business, parents, grandparents, all the important adults in the child's life, that early exposure, that daily reading is so key. I'd also love for us to be able to restore funding to school libraries, school library personnel, because a lot of that has been cut.
Right.
And in order to have a rich reading environment, we need to have those things in our schools.
What about things like music and art?
Those are important too. There is no doubt they're all interrelated, but while music and art are important, so is the school library.
Hmm.
Public library is important. The school library is important. We all have a role to play. Part of that, creating that community of readers.
And I would say from a professional perspective, I would love to see schools really continue their quest for professional development for their teachers. Oftentimes, I think we think that that teachers are done. They're teaching what they know, but we have to continue to grow with what we are learning about how kids learn. And when teachers learn, our students learn.
Are we still studying that? Is there ongoing research into
Absolutely.
How we learn? How much do we learn from kids who grasp it very easily? Do they teach us much?
Absolutely.
Like what?
I had mentioned earlier about a researcher that our project at the Literacy Collaborative is built upon. Her name is Mari Clay. And what she did is she studied high progress readers. And she said, what is it that high progress readers are doing that other students are not?
Mm-hmm.
And from that research, what they're doing well, we're able to actually identify what a child who might be grappling with something needs help on. And so we always want we need to grow all students, but we really can learn a lot from students who are really finding this literacy process easy. We need to focus in and think about what is it that they're doing well that I can help my other students do.
We know that technology has changed how we access all kinds of things, including reading. What about books on tape? A lot of people do that. They use them in the car when they're traveling. Some say, hey, it's better than a television show. But does that help?
It sure does.
Okay.
Listening to a good story together in the car, you're getting mm-hmm. that vocabulary,
yeah.
getting caught up in the story, and then all the great things that are part of that, that comprehension, how a story works, how it's structured. Excellent. We yeah. highly recommend that families listen to books on tape on trips and in the car and continue that as much as possible.
And I would add to that, the listening part is really important because they're getting that fluent reading. But I also would say for younger students, and even into middle school and high school, listen to the book, but look at it as well. Have the actual printed copy in front of you while you're listening to the author's rendition, because you're looking at all of the print and how it's organized, and you're noticing the punctuation, and you're noticing the different complexities of sentences. So I think that that combination of looking while listening is very, very powerful.
We have a question from Austin on email, and I don't know if you can answer it, but he asks how it affects an individual's economic outlook, how literacy affects the economic outlook of an individual. Is that something that you've looked at, Shelley Schaub?
Well, I know that one of our professors, who is now retired, Gay Supanel, who is a world leader in literacy, I've had the blessing to work with her for years. She said that when children are not reading, she has done some research, and she has said that when children are not reading in an early elementary, you know, in those early elementary years, the probability that they will end up in a strong career, the high level of when you interview those in prison, mm-hmm. that's going to an extreme, I know, but lots of their stories go back to the fact that they didn't know how to read. You know, lots of when you think about teenage pregnancy, and you think about, a lot of it goes back to this early feeling of, I'm not quite where everyone else is. And so we want to make an environment where we make sure that all children are supported early on in the reading development.
The parents, we've talked about technology. A lot of times people walk into libraries these days, Kathy Shabadagi, and they see a lot of technology. They see a lot of computers. Tell us about some of the ways that you're using technology to help people get access.
Well, here at Columbus Metropolitan Library, we do have, in our children's areas, we have tablets and we have PCs that are loaded with early literacy activities and games.
And they like that.
Kids love those things. Yeah. They really do. They're one way to work on early literacy, one way that children can start to acquire vocabulary, letter recognition, sounds, and all of those skills. I think just like we want to eat a balanced diet, we want to have a balanced approach to technology and actual physical books and plain old one-on-one reading.
I mean, that's another literacy issue, is the technology gap. It's technology literacy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole nother realm nowadays, isn't it?
Absolutely.
There are some amazing programs out there, though, mm-hmm. for children, apps, that kind of a thing. It doesn't have to be junk.
That's exactly right. We've experimented with some different online platforms in multiple schools, and the children love it. You know, and so I say, you know, just like what Kathy so eloquently put it, we have to provide a balance. You know, mm-hmm. we need to make sure they know how to navigate their technology and be able to enjoy some of the books that then the characters come to life. You know, and that makes them very engaged. But they also need to be able to navigate a book, you know, and it's important.
Kathy, before we let you go, Kathy Shabadagi, tell us what the Great American Read, what you're doing with the Great American Read down here at the Metropolitan Library.
Well, the Great American Read is certainly a featured part of our work, and we are happily promoting, displaying, and connecting readers with the books that they might possibly choose to read or refamiliarize themselves with. That's what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And then,
what did you vote for?
I voted for Charlotte's Web.
Okay.
Because that's the book that turned me into a reader.
And Shelley Schaub, did you vote?
That's an amazing. I didn't vote. Okay. Can I still vote?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
You can still vote. I voted for Animal Farm. I read it when I didn't understand what it was about, but I still liked it. I was about in the fourth grade, and I thought it was a story about animals. So it was fun. It wasn't only till later that I figured it out. So I want to thank both of you, Kathy Shabadagi, Public Services Director for Columbus Metropolitan Library, for joining us today. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And Shelley Schaub, OSU Literacy Collaborative, thank you so much. I appreciate your time today.
This has been a great experience. Thank you.
That's it today. Don't forget to check out The Great American Read. Go to WOSU.org, and we'll have a link for you there to learn more about it. There's still time to vote, I guess. So get your vote in. And thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.